We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56David.com. That's 56David.com.
Mully and Hall. Live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
High fastball, now the throw into second base, and they've got Garcia. Hendricks does not move. Tucker Barnhart the throw, and the challenge there when you have a pitcher at third is you can't force the catcher into thinking about not throwing through because he's not as worried about the runner at third. 2-2, struck him out. So now Liam Hendricks has to come back and strand a runner who's gonna start the inning at second base. 2-2. Hit hard into center, and Cincinnati walks it off. Only one run in the series for the Reds, and they get themselves a split.
Mully and Haw. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Yeah, there you go. It's a two-game series. You score nine runs in one game, and you win 9-0. The next game, they win 1-0. One run, the difference there. And, you know, you had a chance. You had a man on third. You just you had your closer on third. What?
That's not where he's supposed to be. The Reds score one run in two games and get a split out of the series. They have to feel pretty good about that, and they have to feel pretty good about the way that they won a game that the White Sox kind of helped them, you know, win. And now, would that have been differently had Tony La Russa known the rule? Are we looking at the wrong thing because the Sox bats were silent? Well, okay, you can make that argument, but what we're talking about today, because of the way it happened, is a manager who didn't know the rules, openly acknowledged it, and it's not the first time where we have wondered about how ready Tony La Russa is for this challenge after being out of the dugout for a decade.
Let's go to the post game, and again, just listen to this. You don't even have to know what's going on or how it broke down to hear this little exchange with James Fegan that Tony La Russa had after the game yesterday.
Tony, without using Hendricks as the runner in the second inning, was that an intentional choice? As the rule book says, you could have, you know, used Abreu as the pinch runner in that case.
You have to use the guy who made the last out, and that was Vaughn, not Abreu. So Vaughn made the last out.
The rule book, the MLB.com said, if the player in the batting order immediately preceding that half inning's leadoff hitter is the pitcher, the runner placed on second base may be the player preceding the pitcher in the batting order. Did, like, the umps explain anything like that, or?
Well, you know, I didn't know that. We all thought that Liam was going to be the runner, and that's what I wanted there, because if you wanted a double switch to keep him in the game, if you look at all, you know, Abreu back to Moncada and so forth, that's not who you want to double switch out of the game. So I wasn't aware that Abreu could have run. I thought it had to be the guy who made the last out or that spot in the order.
Chris Emma?
Tony, what went into the decision to have Leary stealing in that spot?
Well, we had, you know, he can run. They're playing the infield in. You know, we wanted to be aggressive, and they threw him out. We tried to be aggressive all day long. We just couldn't get in a situation. So that's the only way you win games like that.
Hindsight's 20/20, but with him being the trail runner, is there any, do you wish you would have had that one back?
No.
James?
Was that trying to set up for Liam to try to come home on that, or was that just about, you know, trying
he
to
he wasn't going to run home. That's the reason. I mean, we're going to try to avoid any kind of contact at the plate. We're looking for a fly ball or something. So, you know, the base was there to be stolen. We didn't steal it.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendricks?
Yeah, if I'd known that, I didn't know that. I checked the rule. That was why the guys on the bench came out and questioned me about, you know, that Liam was going to be the runner. And I said, yeah, I know. So we didn't know it. But I know because if you look at the other guys that you would double switch out of the game, I mean, those are not guys. Vaughn was the guy to come out. And I thought we had to get out of the thing. You know, Kopech done a great job, but, you know, his commander at the end. So we got the out in the ninth. But, well, you know, I'll reread that situation. I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know.
Cringeworthy moment. Cringeworthy, the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Bevington-esque. It's
awful.
You need people who are in your dugout with you, on your staff, not to question you, but to tell you if you don't know. They can raise their voices, but who in that dugout will stand up to Tony La Russa when he sees Matt Foster laboring, when he sees Lucas Giolito out of gas, when he sees something happening where a rule exists that he doesn't know? Who's going to stand up to Tony La Russa in that dugout on that staff?
I'll reread that situation. I'm guessing you know the rules better.
No, is that what he said?
Oh, boy.
312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's start with, Perry? Perry's listening on the Odyssey app.
Hi, Perry.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
Third time now in about a month, Tony's contributed to a loss. Mm. And, you know, there's critical thinking, all these kinds of things you look at. And what's really concerning is, you mentioned it, David, the fact that a staff can't open their mouth. I'm sure somebody knew. And if they didn't know, you have the wrong people surrounding you. But I think the bigger problem is, what's kind of scary, I think most people are thinking this, is it's almost like too much to grasp at one time, too fast, too much. The leaving Hamilton the bat and stealing is moronic. But the not knowing the rules, all that combined, it's almost like he can't – it's moving too fast for him to comprehend. And I think three losses in a month, that's kind of a lot. If he multiply that over a season – that's the difference in, like, losing the division. Anyway, I don't want to sound harsh, but I don't like what I'm seeing, and it looks like he's just not ready to manage.
Thanks, Perry.
I don't think anyone wants to sound harsh. I mean, I know some people are. I don't think anyone should take any kind of glee in this. Well, I was right. I told you. They got to get rid of him. I just think as you watch this unfold, it is really difficult to defend what happened in the 10th inning. And there were three things that you can't defend. The closer on third base, starting on second base.
Number one.
The closer.
Yes.
Stealing second.
Inexcusable.
Because it was there.
No reason.
Running yourself out of an inning.
And?
Billy Hamilton.
Absolutely.
Batting.
Why not Zach Collins if you need to fly ball?
It makes sense.
So those are good strategic second-guessing opinions. And I think that when you look at baseball, that's all part of the game. Nobody is wanting to, you know, make this personal about Tony La Russa. You know, this has nothing to do about his age. It has to do about his readiness, perhaps. The game's going faster than maybe he expected. He needs to adjust to it. But I'll maintain this all along. This is an organizational breakdown. This is about Tony La Russa not having a staff who's strong enough, somebody in that dugout, to tell him what's what. Nobody hired to anticipate these kind of situations. And nobody to huddle with him after the game and say, what happened there? Why did this happen? And if he said, I didn't know the rule, from a PR standpoint, somebody's got to tell him, you can't acknowledge that. You can't openly say that. You have to find a way to get around that so you don't have these optics that make you look like you're unfit for the job.
I think part of the problem, David, is it appears from the outside looking in that nobody's helping him. Now, we don't know if he is open to help.
Okay, that's a great point. That's a great point. And I'm assuming that he is.
I would hope so.
But I don't know that. You're right. Either. You're right. Because I'm here ripping the organization. Maybe Tony's difficult to work with or to handle.
We have a texter saying, you guys always say he's forgot more baseball than you guys know. Seems like he's really forgot baseball altogether. Now, I mean, that's mean, you know, frankly, that's what people are thinking.
I got a text from a friend yesterday afterward that made me chuckle. It says, well, the biggest problem was that this wasn't an unwritten rule or else LaRusso would have been all over it.
That's terrible. Let's try Kendall. Kendall's in Naperville. Good morning, Kendall.
Hey, Kendall.
Hey, guys. Oh, boy, this has gotten good. You know, it's one thing, it's bad enough to forget the rules or to not know them like Tony did. But it's quite another to be employing a strategy like it's 1982 and having Lurie run there. It's the most, it was inexplicable. Oh. And here's the thing, he'll learn the rules. He's never going to learn not to manage like it's 1982. And that cannot be fixed because he won't change. And that's going to lose us ball games. To be sacrificing outs on the base, to be risking outs on the base by stealing bases, is the stupidest thing you can do. To bunt and sacrifice outs is the stupidest thing you can do. It's just proven by math over thousands of games, and he won't budge. And I'm so mad about it. Ugh, I hate being a White Sox fan. Hate it.
Thanks for the phone call, Kendall. Observational analytics. When you see Tucker Barnhart behind the plate, you've got to at some point know he's going to throw out Lurie Garcia. He's going to make that play, so don't steal.
Joseph is on the road. Good morning, Joseph.
Hi, Joseph.
Hey, how's it going? I just had a quick comment. I don't blame Tony for not knowing the rule. It's a new rule. And even in the Cubs game last night, it happened twice. And if Pat hadn't been talking about it during the broadcast, I don't think the Cubs would have even realized that you could run before the pitcher.
I don't agree with that. I think National League teams were well-versed in the rule more so maybe than an American League team. Maybe you give Tony that benefit of the doubt. But I think that you heard from David Bell after the Reds game, the Reds manager saying that this was a point of emphasis during spring training.
I mean, here's the thing. We have a texter checking in who says, a 773 texter says, Jerry's not going to fire Tony. Tony's not going to resign. This is what we're looking at for the duration.
Maybe not. Maybe so. I think let's wait and see. There's a lot of baseball left to be played. And the Sox, you know, they can point to the record and say they're winning despite all of this controversy and all of these questionable decisions. But I don't think that I can sit here on May 6th. I think either one of us are saying that, you know how this is going to unfold, because what if it does get worse? What if this continues? You can't in good conscience sit there and let this happen with a team that, even with the injuries, is good enough to win a division, and then you get to October and anything can happen.
John is in Joliet. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Good morning, guys. You know what I would have preferred Tony to say? Oh, my bad. I mean, I just don't get it. Why are you trying to be aggressive to steal second base when you got to run around third base? Why are you trying to be aggressive?
It's crazy.
It's beyond me.
I mean, and John, the only justification would be if you thought you had a double steal going or something, or you knew something that other people didn't know. It made no sense. And then the idea, well, you know, you want to get out of the double play. Well, how is that possible? Because you got the fastest guy on the team at the plate, and he's going to strike out anyway. Who are we kidding? Oh, my God. You threw away an out.
Know, that's one way to avoid the double play.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a guy who's going to strike out.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank God we can get to Tim Anderson without worrying about it. I mean, listen, this is madness. Let's get to Jack. Jack is on the road. Good morning, Jack.
Hi, Jack.
Good morning. Yeah, I mean, I had the fun, actually. I took the day off yesterday flipping through MLB, and the Sox were on, so I watched that whole game. It was a great game, really. I mean, you know, I know that if you...
Oh, we're losing you, Jack. Sorry. Let's get to Michael. Michael is with Mullion Hall. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Michael. Morning, Michael.
Uh-oh.
Go ahead, Michael.
We're having problems with the line, apparently. Michael.
Communication issues.
Michael and
that's our version of communication issues.
John,
the Sox had their own.
Yeah. What happened? 312-644-6767. It is really, it's just, here's the thing. When you are the injured team, right? The injured party, if you will, you've got to figure out ways that to win that are not going to be second guessed. You know, these are games. You need all these games. If you're, you know, given the issues in the outfield.
Yes.
The idea that you're in that game because you got another great pitching performance, and the pitching has been fantastic.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. The starting pitching, top to bottom, has been absolutely fantastic. So you're in another game. You've got to figure out a way to win it. And everybody says the same thing. Well, if you don't score runs, you're not going to win. If you got a man on third, in extra innings,
you're in a position to win.
You've got to figure out a way that he scores. And to have lost that opportunity in the fashion in which they did, a guy thrown out at second base and a guy that was up there to strike out, in my opinion, I felt that way from the minute he had the bat in his hand. The only chance you had is if he bunted, and he's not going to bunt, take the bat out of his hands and put someone else in. I would rather Mendick bat there, okay? And I'm not saying that's what
they
should have
done. More likely to make contact.
I think Zach Collins had to bat there.
Yeah.
Fly ball hitter, you're looking for a sacrifice fly. Period, end of story.
And how long ago was it that we were talking about Zach Collins being left on the bench when he sent up Luis García and Billy Hamilton in a key situation? These are second-guessing decisions and things that have become sort of the norm. And the margin for error has been reduced with the injuries. So you think that you want a manager that's able to maybe steal you a run here or there, and you just have no confidence that Tony La Russa is that guy anymore.
All right, we're going to be taking your calls all morning. We got to get to the pick six. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Is it an overreaction to blame White Sox manager Tony La Russa for a 10th inning loss when his team failed to score a single run? Is La Russa an easy target because of his confusion over the 10th inning rules? Should someone else on the staff have been able to help this guy?
There's a yes to a lot of those questions. However, there was not just one gaffe. It wasn't just the rules issue. There were, as we have discussed, three really questionable decisions that led to the fact that they did not score runs. They should have scored a run. It is just beyond human comprehension that they couldn't score a run in that situation, and they ran themselves out of it because of the manager, and they had the wrong guy at bat because of the manager. So I think that while it's important to get him help and to have other people whispering in his ear and make sure he understands all of the rules, that wasn't the only problem with that inning. So in my opinion, it's not an overreaction at all to blame this loss on Tony La Russa. I think it is a fair assessment of the series of moves that he made and where it left you as a result. And unfortunately, this has happened a few times. And I think that there is reason to be concerned.
I don't think it's an overreaction at all, because let's go back to October, or let's go back to when they hired Tony La Russa. All of these other controversies that came up after the fact with the DUI and the he's been out of the game for a long time, the age issue, however you wanted to look at the controversy and what category you want to put that in, we were told, or it was under the assumption that he was here and he was being hired because his in-game strategy would show us why he was so important to be hired at this point of his career and at this stage of the White Sox growth. Well, these in-game decisions are what are baffling in the first month of the season and lead you to wonder about his worthiness as a manager, because again, this was a controversy created in part. The root of it was the bad strategy, bad decision making. It's not an overreaction. Someone else needs to step forward It was an organizational breakdown, but it starts with the manager, and that's where the responsibility, the bulk of it at least, falls.
A pick six to end the half!
In addition to not knowing he had the option to have Jose Abreu at second base instead of Hendricks, La Russa admitted he didn't want to have a play at the plate with the pitcher. Does that simply underscore the insanity of the entire episode? Isn't that an admission the entire strategy was based on an avoidable mistake?
Yeah, somebody should have said, okay, what is our $54 million closer doing at second base to start the inning? And if that is the rule, then shouldn't we maybe find somebody to run for him? Because having him healthy is more important than preserving the lead at the bottom of the inning if you get the lead. So I don't know why that didn't trigger some alarm in somebody's mind in that dugout on that bench to say, what's wrong with this pitcher? MLB can't want the closers, pitchers even, to be running the bases in extra inning games. There's got to be a rule. There's got to be a loophole. And it turns out that there was, even though it wasn't Andrew Vaughn, as Tony thought, it was Jose Abreu because of the rules. It was an avoidable mistake. But I don't think it ever dawned on the American League manager or the American League staff that, boy, that we're in a National League park and we should know this, because they clearly didn't.
You had a bases loaded situation and you brought in your closer. So I'm with that. If you didn't know the rules, then why didn't you bring in another player and then try to go to Aaron Bummer or whomever in the ninth inning or right. The 10th inning, I mean,
right.
when you, you know, just not Garrett Crochet, when you had a man on second. So I think that, yes, the entire strategy was flawed. It was flawed up and down the line, all the way around. And the sending Leury Garcia might have been the dumbest part of the whole thing. And Dustin says, we've had the argument, and we've come up with, well, it was really dumb not knowing the rules, but it was really dumb sending Leury Garcia. No, having Billy Hamilton keep the bat in his hands was the dumbest thing. There was no reason to have Billy Hamilton bat there. There was just no reason. Did you really think he was going to win it? Why? Because they were nice to him? They cheered him because he's an old red coming home? Give me a break. Listen, that is avoidable mistakes, and this is what we've talked about. When you're in a position where you've lost a couple of high-value players, you can't make avoidable mistakes. When I say you can't have any little league errors, that applies to the manager too.
A pick six of 100 yards.
If you had to bet 1 week of our executive producer Dustin's salary on whether Tony La Russa would be manager of the White Sox 4 months from now, would you do it? Why do you think he will or won't?
If I get an opportunity to bet Dustin's salary, I'm just going to put it on whatever is the better value bet and hope for the best, right? Because
right.
I don't care. It's just Dustin's salary. Yeah, I would take that money and I would put it on whatever the odds said would pay me off more. I wouldn't worry about being right about it. To answer the question, or the implied question, I got a hard time. I think that the texter's right. I think it's Jerry's not going to fire him, and Tony's not going to quit. So I don't know what you're left with.
A lot of stubbornness going on here. I think that Tony La Russa's a proud guy. I think Jerry Reinsdorf's a stubborn guy. I have a hard time seeing that they are going to come to the realization that they're going to give in here, even though it might be the best thing at some point in time. Are we there yet? Well, you could make that argument if you wanted to. It's professional sports, and this is not off to a good start. Despite what the record implies, the Sox have lost some really bad games because of their manager and because of those decisions. The pace seems too fast. Rules may be too complex. It's not 2011. Sox need to help Tony. I don't know if they need to get rid of somebody on that staff or add somebody to it, but they need to help Tony, and they need to insulate their manager better than they have, because if you're going to bring a guy back after 10 years away, you've got to do a better job. You can't just say, okay, go manage. Because everything has changed, everything is faster, and you're doing him a disservice if you just leave him out there hanging. And I feel like too often, the Sox have left Tony La Russa hanging. So while I'm disappointed in his performance, I'm probably more disappointed with the organization as a whole because of what they haven't done to make Tony La Russa better and put him in a better position to succeed.
Pick six!
Did Albert Alzolay's performance on Wednesday night, coupled with good work from Keegan Thompson and Justin Steele the night before, change your feelings in any way regarding the Cubs' future pitchers? Who do you want to see more of?
Love this question because Justin Steele was talking about it yesterday as well, talking about how these guys have banded together in the minor leagues and they hear the chatter and they see the stuff on social media. The Cubs haven't developed any pitchers under Theo Epstein. And you know what? We matter. We're still here. We can hear you. Okay. So good for Justin Steele to speak up. Keegan Thompson, another guy that I think maybe he was the one talking about it as well. I think they both have referenced it. And then we see Alzolay last night. He had some dizziness at the end, which is a bit of a concern after he came out. But that's another strong outing on the heels of his best one of the year. So this is a positive development. And I think that you have to look at something with this up and down Cub team to point to as a point of sign of encouragement. And their young pitchers so far have been that.
Yeah, I love what I've seen of those guys. I thought it was a great series against the Dodgers because of it. You know, Alzolay is locked in for me. I wouldn't hesitate. And I'd like to see more of the other two. I would. I'd like to see more of them. And I think it was pretty impressive. And I like what they're finally getting done. So good for them. Bully for them. And I do feel differently seeing young guys come up and actually be able to perform.
Pick six. Wow.
The Bears announced single game tickets will go on sale next Wednesday night to coincide with the NFL schedule release. It's not confirmed, but a good chance exists for Soldier Field to be at full capacity. Would you have reservations about buying game tickets if given the chance, or do you think by August fan enthusiasm will outweigh any worries about COVID?
Boy, I gotta tell you, the whole COVID thing, it's just, I think I'm ruined for life. I'm not sure I'm ever going to shake anyone's hand again, which is really weird. You know, coming into the building this morning and seeing the places to stand and wait for the elevator. Obviously, there's no one at the elevator at the hour we get in. But it's just, you know, there's hand sanitizer everywhere. I get off the elevator and there's hand sanitizer. So I get the hand sanitizer. Now I can't get it to dry before I got to start doing the rest of my business because I got to get over and get my ID down. And then ladies, you know, we're keeping socially distant. We got our masks on. And I'm thinking to myself, like, when will this be normal again? And have I been traumatized to this, to the point where, you know, I'm already a little bit, you know, don't like enclosed spaces or people on top of me. That is pre-existing condition. Throw this thing in. I guess my answer is I'm not enthused about the Bears games for some reason. I think people will. I have a hard time imagining an entire full crowd. It's just been too long. So, I was talking to a friend who recently went to the movies. Oh, my God. And I said, first thing I said, did anyone cough? Did someone sneeze in the theater? Like, I don't know how I'm going to. No one has to yell fire. They just have to sneeze, and I'll go running out of the theater. I'm not ready for the Bears full capacity. I do want to go to a baseball game, and I want to do it soon.
You still can't yell fire in a semi-crowded theater. So I think that people will come back. I think that there's a power, there's a passion that I think we saw when the Bears drafted Justin Fields. And I think that it's real. And to see the metamorphosis in the morale of a fan base makes me feel like by September that people will convince themselves that things are safe. And even if they aren't, it's worth the risk to go see number one, even if it's standing on the sidelines. I think there's this sort of a feeling and enthusiasm, and people are bursting and waiting and wanting to get there. I'm curious to see what happens Friday night. And then this weekend with the Bulls and the Blackhawks having fans at the United Center after both of their seasons are sort of over for all intents and purposes. I like the idea of what Mark Potash tweeted yesterday, that this dynamic pricing that they're selling in terms of for fans has to do with the opponent and not who's starting at quarterback. Could you imagine that?
That's funny.
But I do think that ultimately fan enthusiasm might outweigh the COVID concerns by the time we get to Labor Day. And I think that we're going to see enthusiasm return to Soldier Field.
This is Jamal Adams with a block and a pick six.
What do you make of Zach LaVine saying he didn't have any major symptoms after testing positive for COVID-19? How about Casey Johnson's report that a source told him LaVine had taken one shot of a two-dose vaccine when he tested positive? Are you expecting him to play tonight?
Well, I do think he's going to play tonight. I think he has been frustrated. You feel for Zach LaVine, given the fact that he was on the way to doing the right thing and getting vaccinated. He was in between shots, and that happens, unfortunately. It's rare, but it happens, and that's a sobering reminder of how far we have come, but maybe how far we still have to go. So I just felt the frustration that you heard in his voice, you know, in terms of he didn't have any major symptoms, and here's an all-star player coming into his own with a career year, having to sit out. Even though he feels fine, this is a guy who's played through injury, but you can't play through COVID, and it was had to be tough to watch. So you feel for Zach LaVine.
Yeah, there's less than 1% chance that the Bulls make the playoffs. They've actually reached that point with 7 games to play. So he's practiced. He's back. Let's go. That sounds good to me. Listen, you know, it's important everyone just get vaccinated and get on with their lives. Let's just say that first of all. I feel bad that he had the one shot of the 2 shots. It makes me worry about, you know, my kids. And I've got a 15-year-old who turns 16 in August, and I'm hoping that we can get this. There's talk now of approving the vaccine. It's a couple months. In my mind, she's 16. Most of her friends are. So I would love to see her get this vaccine and just have everybody get it. And I'm worried about my children, and I'm worried about the future, and I just want that off the plate in terms of pandemic. So I feel bad that he got it after one shot. It just is a reminder. You got to get both shots, wait 2 weeks, and then go about your business. So that's hopefully what everyone will do. 312-644-6767. We'll get back to your calls. I know a lot of people are hanging on, but we've got more fun first. We're going to talk to Josh Nelson from Sox Machine. We're going to talk about what the people are thinking with Tony La Russa, what people are thinking after that game yesterday, and we'll find out where Josh is at with all this stuff. He also had a really interesting rant about Jose Abreu getting his act together. So fun to talk to him. We'll do that next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendricks?
Yeah, if I'd known that, I didn't know that. I checked the rule. That was why the guys on the bench came out and questioned me about, you know, that Liam was going to be the runner. And I said, yeah, I know. So we didn't know it.
Oh, boy. Okay. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You're not going to trigger me, David, by playing that. I'm not going to get upset about it. Not when we are delighted to have Josh Nelson join us. Josh Nelson is Mr. Sox Machine, does a great job. You got to hear the podcast and, of course, follow them every morning. They do great breakdowns of the game. And Josh joins us now on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or APNissan.com. Josh, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Josh.
Good morning. I don't know about you, Mully, but that does trigger me, and I already have a headache now this morning. I appreciate James Fegan of The Athletic asking that question directly to Tony La Russa and getting that instant feedback, because it does give us additional insight that we haven't been getting the last couple of years because the beat reporters haven't been allowed to be in the clubhouse. And you get a lot more stories, in-depth stories, a long 162-game season about all the coaches and their personalities and what they do on a day-to-day basis. We're not getting those stories anymore because all these interviews are over Zoom. But I do appreciate James asking that question directly to Tony La Russa, so we get that type of feedback from Tony, understanding that he may have been told by somebody in the bench that Liam Hendricks didn't have to run. And it gives us insight that Tony maybe ignored them anyways and still had the $54 million closer run the bases. It's very telling right now what's going on the White Sox bench after 29 games.
So when you hold people responsible then, Josh, when you process your frustration, and I saw you tweet yesterday you had to go for a walk, when you're considering who to blame and how to cope – how much of it is on Tony La Russa and how much of it is that staff or his bench coaches who, you know, allowed this to happen or didn't speak up loudly enough?
You know, that's a good question. How much does a Hall of Fame manager listen to his bench coach who's brand new in the job? That's I think that's a key question here. And, you know, Tony, when he has made mistakes this season, he's been accountable. He blames himself during the media sessions. But I think he needs to start trusting his coaches a little bit more. I think he needs to understand, despite all of your experience, there are things about this game today and the way that the game is being played and the rules that we have in place that you may not fully understand. But someone like Joe McEwing, who was Rick Renteria's bench coach the last couple of years, and especially last year, does understand these rules. So maybe you need to listen to Super Joe a little bit more if he is trying to give you advice and let you know how certain situations play out. So I think there is a combination of maybe stubbornness from a Hall of Fame manager who has thought that he's been through every possible situation along his illustrious career. And yesterday was a situation he's never encountered. And he makes it sound like somebody was trying to tell him that you don't need to do this, but he did it anyways. So he may chalk it up as a learning experience. But boy, if I am in the White Sox front office, that is a very angry phone call or text messages being sent down the chain. Because 2 days after Luis Robert is going to be out 12 to 16 weeks with a torn right hip flexor, you're having our $54 million closer run the bases? Come on, guys. We got to be smarter about this. And now every team is going to be laughing at us this morning because it's like, wow, the White Sox don't know the extra inning rules. Maybe we should try to play more extra inning games against them.
Yeah, I said to David, the only good news is that he didn't roll Garrett Crochet out there with the guy behind him, because that always seems to end in disaster.
With his two left feet.
0-3 in 10 inning games. Look, I mean, you just said it, and I think that's the problem. When the White Sox lost Luis Robert, when you all of a sudden, all my Sox fan friends, we started talking, and it's like, how can they go on without Aloy and Luis Robert? It was almost like the two of them suddenly became connected, and the Aloy thing came back to life where we had been trying to hide it and disguise it in our minds. So that's a very difficult thing to have happen, because it seemed like the one injury really was two injuries, because it reminded you of the other injury. And then Adam Engel is hurt, and you never know when he's coming. And then you look at the outfield, and here's Leary Garcia. It's just not working this year, and he's trying to steal second base. So even if he doesn't know the rules, what's that? And why the hell is Billy Hamilton still with a bat in his hand? Why you need to bring the run in? You got Collins there as a fly ball hitter. What an opportunity for a sacrifice fly! It wasn't one mistake. It wasn't just Tony isn't listening to people. It was, like, to me, three very distinct errors.
Yeah, and Jim Margulis, my partner, he wrote about this last week about the bad patterns. Like, you were right, Molly. These are not one-offs. We've got a bad pattern going on. And even Steve Stone tweeted about it yesterday. There are two things that Billy Hamilton does exceptionally well. He's a good center fielder defensively, and he's one of the fastest players in all of Major League Baseball. The dude cannot hit. He cannot hit. If you have a bat in his hands in the extra innings, he has to bunt, okay? And La Russa said, we're looking for a fly ball there. You're right, Molly. Why in the world is Billy Hamilton hitting then if you are looking for a fly ball, especially if you got Zach Collins on the bench? And White Sox fans have said, well, if you take out Hamilton, who plays center? Leury Garcia, he's still in the game. You move him to center. You got Danny Mendick on the bench. Have him fake it in right field. You got everybody else faking to play left field. Why not right field as well? And you try to get that one run across. And, yeah, Liam Hendricks running the bases didn't cost the White Sox the game. They only had two hits yesterday. But when it's 0-0 in extra innings, you got to find a way to score. And when you got a guy 90 feet away to put you ahead in the game, you got to make the right calls to try to get that runner across home plate. And La Russa didn't even do that as well. So you're right. It's just not understanding what the rules were yesterday. It's still bad managing. It's bad calls on top of not knowing the rules. And there are optimistic White Sox fans that are Tony supporters, and they look at the standings and say, the White Sox are in first place right now. But the run differential and expected win-loss record should have them at 18 and 11, not 16 and 13. Mm-hmm. They're underachieving by two games. They should be leading the division by two games. So that's kind of where my frustration is at the moment, is that, yeah, White Sox fans can be happy. They're tied for first place with Kansas City and Cleveland, but they should be leading this division, and they're missing out on a golden opportunity, especially with the Minnesota Twins still struggling.
Okay, Josh, your passion's obvious. So is the fact that you're plugged into watching every game and knowing what's going on. So as a Sox fan, what do you think will happen with Tony La Russa as manager, and what do you think should happen?
I think he's going to give up after this year. I think this is a one-year deal, David. You've done this a lot longer than I have, especially being those press conferences, reading coaches and players. So I'll ask you a question. Tony, to me, looks tired when you watch these Zoom press conferences, and it's only game 29. Like, exhaustion is starting to kick in. Do you get that same sense when you're watching La Russa answer questions after games?
I do.
And the travel hasn't really kicked in, right? Yeah. I mean, it's 29 it's, games in.
It's undeniable.
Yeah. We got 133 more games left to go.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how he's going to make it, honestly. I don't. So if he looks exhausted now, the gauntlet begins. In the next 75 days, guys, the White Sox play the Minnesota Twins 16 times. Here we go. If you want to win the American League Central, you need to have a very good 75 days. Try to limit the amount of mistakes. Injuries will happen. Every team's going through injuries. You'll need to overcome it. And the bullpen will have to perform better when they have the lead late in games. But over these next 75 days are going to be critical for the White Sox, because they can even add more ground on their chief rival in this division, because everybody assumes at some point the Minnesota Twins will wake up and start playing better baseball. And you don't want to be the reason why they start playing better baseball with that many games in such a short amount of time. So I think this is one and done, David. Like, wherever the White Sox end up, if they win the World Series, great. I can retire again, going out on top. But if they don't, I don't expect him to come back. I don't, because I think he'll just be tired. Then he'll be 77-year-old Tony La Russa, and he may not have the energy for a second season.
Josh, great work. You do wonderful work. Jim Margulis, the two of you, fantastic. Sox Machine, the place to go. The podcast is great, and love your work. Thanks a ton for coming on.
Good stuff, Josh. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Have a great morning, guys.
That is Josh Nelson, and that is a real – if you're a Sox fan, that's a real fun place to go.
Smart guy.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, we're going to get to your phone calls. A lot of people want to check in. 312-644-6767. That's the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.